This is Jan Cox, talk number 2394, recorded on July 14th, 1999.
Kind of guy I've mentioned in the past that said, here's another version, I'm going to give you my interpretation, a guy who said, every time someone asked him about enlightenment, he said, don't ask me about enlightenment, all I'm looking for is a cure for enlightenment. My interpretation is this. That is, the man is not saying that there is anything that he has found to be wrong with the goal of achieving enlightenment. My interpretation is the man has full knowledge and experience as to what enlightenment is. He is no newcomer. He is not making any negative statement about enlightenment. And it is not in any way sour grapes, as I said, or an excuse-moi that he can't do it. In my interpretation, he knows full well and from experience what it is. But here's the way I would say it. Instead of him saying that what he's looking for is a cure for enlightenment, I would put it this way. Constantly on the lookout for a new antidote, to stale storytelling. An alexipharmacal, a mirthidate, an antidote. Just so happened there was a word, alexipharmacal, was at one time in the Middle Ages, was considered, it was like, it's like the Holy Grail of alchemists, that it would be the antidote for every known poison or ill possible. I am going to start off and give a description of the nervous system of man. And it comes more or less out of very standard, 30-year-old at least, so it could be refined, but the basis of it is still operable, I know, of the nervous system of man. And I'm not going to be cute, and I have pared it down. I've not twisted anything. I am not speaking allegorically. I have no cute stories in mind tonight. I have no clever allegorical pictures to draw from the nervous system. What I'm going to do is, at least to start off with, I'm just going to describe it, the general functions as accepted by medicine. Not mystics. Just the kind of thing that you would find in a standard physiology textbook, the kinds of things that med students would be memorizing in their first year, the kinds of things that any neurologist or a good MD should know from memory. But as they were studying this in med school and having to memorize all of the nerves and the anatomy of the brain and the physiology of the brain, studying neurology, studying medicine wakes no one up. I propose to you that this can be an antidote to stale storytelling, to get you out of a certain place. But as I start talking, I'm going to leave it to you. I plan to talk fairly, and my intent is slowly, in general, maybe a little specific in certain areas. But remember what this is about and what we meet together for, and you try. And hear something else. Or think about all the stuff we've talked about, all the things that you have considered on your own, all the things that you have discovered on your own. Try and think about, in other words, if you must look at it this way, be doing your own allegories or your own, really, symbols, because I'm describing the actual accepted workings of the nervous system, the anatomy and functions in certain areas, as I said, I have simplified it, but it does not distort any of the accepted descriptions of the human nervous system, the anatomy and functions of the brain. But as I'm describing it, see what wants to leap from your little mind, having to do with any and everything that you've ever thought about, having to do with mysticism, awakening, being more conscious. Because there is no metaphysics without physics. There is no mysticism without physiology. There is no mind without consciousness, and there is no consciousness without very specific operations in the nervous system and the brain, which I'm going to point out. I assume that some of this may have come back to some of you. And for you out there on tape, I did draw up a little sketch that we hung up here, and I'm not even sure anyone here in Atlanta can even see it from where they are, so I am going to describe it a little bit as I go. It starts off, what it represents is the central nervous system, which is the brain and the spinal cord and the peripheral nervous system. And I've got the shoulders and arms kind of a stick figure so that you could at least see the peripheral nervous system bringing in the sensory information into the spinal cord, and then it goes up to the brain. Then on top of the little stick figure I have drawn, I've divided the brain up into just four general areas, five if you count the brain stem. And of course, there are many other areas and sub-distinctions within these, but I am fairly well within what would be accepted as just a very basic schematic of the operations of the brain to cover everything of interest, at least to us. And it really covers everything, all the functions of the body. So coming up out of the spinal cord, may I remind you again, I probably will do it even additional times, don't get lost and think, you know, lapse into some sort of low-level dream and think perhaps that you're back in college or that I'm up to something else and that I'm trying to give some lesson in anatomy or physiology. I am not. But I am bringing to you something I found of great use periodically, and it's been many decades since I've been back to this personally. But if you cannot slap yourself continually, if you cannot slap yourself out of stale storytelling, which the attempt to awaken from beginning to end is storytelling. It's all it is. And it becomes stale. I keep trying to freshen it up, but I am presenting to you now what I find to be perhaps the ultimate in freshness, to go from all things that appear on the surface verbally to be mystical, metaphysical, spiritual, mental, to those things that are flesh and bone, which is all we got anyway. The rest of this stuff is storytelling. But the ultimate slap to me is to go from the psyche, the psychological, into the absolute physiological. So, remember, I am not giving a lesson in anatomy or physiology, but what I am saying would be right out of some textbook. I'm not playing cutesy with it whatsoever. But listen to it, and then try and hear all the things that you already know, or some of the things that will pop up. They're right here. There is nothing else. Coming out of the spinal cord, it turns into the brain, as we all know. And I just picked it. Anyway, here I go. And on top of that, for you people out there on tape, I designate the brain stem, just an area where the spinal cord actually turns into the brain. On top of that, I drew a circle in green, the little brain, the cerebellum. And it is generally considered to be that which is in charge of motor coordination, physical coordination. Now, inside the brainstem is the brainstem itself is considered to be like the entryway of all the incoming impressions, the sensory information. And it down in there is some of the internal involuntary, the internal regulations of the body. But when it gets to be a little bit above just the visceral, the operations of the organs is considered to be, and all of this they have tested years ago, it's just accepted fact, and I'm not arguing with it, that the cerebellum is actually in charge of motor coordination, getting you through life physically. And on top of that, in purple, I drew the thalamus, which is actually two main parts, but the thalamus in general is considered to be the integrator of the sensory information and decides where in the upper reaches of the brain, if anything's going further, it goes. And then wrapped around that is what they call the limbic system that I've mentioned in times past when sort of briefly, which is considered to be what regulates just what ordinary people, med students and anybody else, would call their emotions, man's emotions. And above that, you've got the general body, the main body of the brain, and around it, I drew in yellow, whether you can see it here in the room, but the cerebral cortex itself. And as you may know, that the cortex means covering, and supposedly, it's an accepted fact, that if you unwrapped it, if you slice it off of the human brain, that wrinkled up part, part that you always see in movies, the gray matter, and you straighten it out, it supposedly would cover roughly a card table. If you smooth it out, got an iron to it, and it would turn out to be roughly the thickness, they used to say, of shoe leather, the sole of a shoe. And the cerebral cortex is where we think, plan, and it's where all memory is stored. And it's where we can analyze. And there are two areas in the cerebral cortex of specific interest, or at least the way I'm going to tie it in. It's known as two strips that are easily located, known. They know what they do. They know what damage to them, how it'll affect you. But it is called in the cerebral cortex, the motor cortex, and the sensory cortex. And the sensory cortex is that area where the information coming in. Your hand touches something of some significance, or it could be of significance. It gets to the brainstem, and there in the brainstem also is another really interesting part. I just put the initials RES. It's in the brainstem, the reticular activating system. It is that that keeps the brain active and excited. And they have fooled around with it enough. It's just a bundle of a network of nerves inside the brainstem, and it is considered to be the primary monitor and filter of the sensory information coming in. Like you're sitting there right now, if your hands are on the arms of the chair and there's nothing particular going on, you have an awareness of it, but it's not any sort of important sensory information. And they used to say that out of the possible millions of potential bits of sensory information collected from the peripheral nervous system of your body right now, all up and down your leg from sitting in that chair, all up and down your foot from your foot being on the floor, that somebody supposedly took the time and they know the number of nerves running in the body, believe it or not. And so it's obvious that they could be at any particular moment, at least a million bits of information, sensory information, make it from the peripheral nervous system into the spinal cord, up the spinal cord, get to the brainstem, about to go into the brain, and there in the brainstem, in the reticular activating system, it decides what's important enough to go higher up in the brain. And then, like I say, if you're sitting here right now, you can be aware in the supposedly reticular activating system could be aware that your hands are gripping the sides, the arms of your chair. But there are no splinters. It's not hot. It's not real cold. It's just there. So there's no need for higher levels, higher areas of the brain, the cerebral cortex, consciousness. There's no need to take any note of it. If, however, you slid your hand around and suddenly jammed a splinter, you know, these chairs, the one I'm sitting in, has got a wooden strip on top, and if it's suddenly a splinter stuck in the palm of your hand, that would be the kind of information that would get through and get to the cerebral cortex. And it would come into that strip that is called the sensory cortex. And it would say, well, you know how it goes, that my hand hurts. There's something in the palm of my hand. And then, right next to it is the motor cortex. It would send back information down through the, just reversing that, more or less, go down through the spinal cord, out the peripheral nervous system, and would activate nerves, muscles, I should say, activate muscles in your hand and in your arm, in your shoulder, to jerk your hand away. Of course, as I've pointed out, and there's, besides the central nervous system, the peripheral, is the autonomic things that it just goes on. It's mainly the internal operations of the body, and there are very crude reactions to sensory information that happens in our spine and goes no further, happens in the spinal cord, as we normally call reflex action, which we have in common with all sorts of animals. In fact, animals in general, even the higher vertebrates, their only action is reflex action. That it happens, that kind of information, that kind of reflex action doesn't even have to go to the brain. It's already wired up that the information just gets to the spinal cord. Well, perhaps the best known is when the doctor hits you on the knee to test your reflexes, supposedly, that is to check the absolute minimal reflex. It's just the spinal cord reflex. It's got nothing to do with the brain whatsoever. And it's the same kind of response to the environment that every animal has, generally speaking, except man. That even when people apparently can change the automatic reflexive action of animals, they don't really change it. When somebody like when Pavlov got dogs to salivating when he would ring a bell after he kept feeding them, it's not that they learned new behavior, it's now a new reflex. You have got to have, at least on our planet, as far as we know, you have got to have what is called in us the cerebral cortex to activate anything other than reflective action. Has anybody forgotten what we're here for? Consider how little. You do know what they mean when they call, when they refer to motor activity. That's really as opposed to visceral, internal activity of the beating of the heart. It's motor activity is what the body can physically be observed to be doing. There's very little that humans are born knowing to do motor-wise. If you remember, you have to learn to walk. You actually learn to walk. You learn to control. Well, I won't get into visceral. I was going to say you have to learn to control some of the involuntary. You learn to walk. But very quickly, what happens to it? Now, again, I am just using standard accepted medical realities. But remember what we're here for. We're talking about that storytelling thing of achieving another state of consciousness. Let's say learn to walk. One of the more important early things, you actually have to learn to walk. It is picked up, is learned. The information is filtered through the cerebellum, the thalamus. The information gets up to the cerebral cortex and in pretty short order, it is filed in memory. And I assume everyone knows how quickly a child, an ordinary child, learns to walk. And after you once learn to walk, that's the end of it. But had it not been for the cerebral cortex, of course, walking is kind of a crude example. How about driving a car? Because other animals actually are born laying down and have to stand up and walk, at least you get distracted. But it's still valid. You have to learn to do it. And it actually is filed away in memory. Because it is also a known fact that you can have certain parts of the cerebral cortex damaged. You've probably seen people, whether you knew it or not, and they may still be able to walk, but it is almost a farce of someone walking. There is no fluid movement. It is very jerky. They're almost stumbling. It's almost just a constant battle of them. They're about to fall over, and they just, all they can do is sort of catch themselves. You can't really call it walking. They can move about. And it doesn't, and it can be from simple damage to a particular area of the brain, not anything physical to do with the legs. That is, they have forgotten, in a sense, how to walk. And every time they try to walk, they're having to teach themselves again how to walk. Remind you of something else, but a bit more specifically. I normally just mention it in passing. But again, this is right out of elementary, physiological text. That thin coating of the cerebral cortex, so I assume you know, it can be separated surgically from the rest of the brain. And you can continue to live. You can continue to react to noises, to changes in light, changes in temperature. You can, in fact, walk. You can still get about. You don't have to. You're not necessarily in a vegetated state. But you lose everything immediately resembling what anybody calls personality. You can no longer make any plans. You can't plan a moment ahead, a minute ahead. You have no memory. None. You do something and you forget it. You have no memory. Your life is a blank. Everything that can be called consciousness exists without any doubt. Now remember, I'm talking from a textbook. Forget this is even me. I'm just reminding you of things that you probably read way back in college or sometime. But this is what you can find. Go pick up any just generalized book on the physiology of the nervous system and the brain. Without the cerebral cortex in place, you've got nothing that can be called consciousness. As far as medicine is concerned, as far as neurology is concerned, in one way, consciousness amounts to only this. It is a certain area of the brain, the cerebral cortex, being continually excited by the reticular formation where the brain joins the spinal cord. From one view, that is consciousness. Again, this is not theory. They have had enough experience throughout the years of damage in a certain place. What we call consciousness, what I refer to, now here's the kind of thing you should be doing by your, I was hoping for yourself, I'm going ahead and point out, of us, mystics throughout the ages, talking about that the problem is we're trying to calm the mind, trying to stop this random associative flow of thought. Do you know that there is a bundle? Well, it's not really a bundle. Turns out reticular means net-like. But anyway, there's a bunch of nerves right below this lump in the back of your head, the cerebellum. Down in the brainstem is the reticular formation. And this thing, the one that monitors the information coming in, It is continually firing energy into the brain, and specifically, well, into the brain, and it gets to the cerebral cortex. It is that, from one view, any neurologist or any doctor with a good memory of the anatomy and physiology could not deny this based on their own findings. If the reticular formation stops, you're unconscious. It is that which electroencephalographs are measuring when they stick it on your head. Is if they know that the, you know, what they're measuring is the brain activity. As far as I know, they're measuring it in the cerebral cortex. And such as when you're asleep, an average person supposedly, then it's firing off. It measures on the EEG is somewhere between 1 and 3 or 4 bursts per second, or waves per second. And then as you gradually wake up, it increases. And I think that generally what's considered to be a conscious person, once you're awakened out of bed, that it's something like 9 to 13 cycles per second then. But it's coming from this group of nerves, the reticular activating system. And you understand, if it slows down, you're asleep. Or conversely, if you're asleep, it is slowed down. And it can be measured, there's no doubt. And then as you gradually awaken, they measure that. They even have stages, whatever they call it. But if you're just semi-awake, it goes from 7 to 10 or whatever the hell it is. But then once you get up and you wipe the sleep out of your eyes and you go and yawn and stretch and actually start walking about, besides all the physiological changes that happen below the cortical level, that is, that the blood pressure increases and your equilibrium changes, and down the brainstem, taking measurements, information coming from the ears is telling now that you're upright, you're not laying down, and when you stand up on one foot, you're already leaning, but it knows how to compensate before you get your other foot out of bed. All of that's done, but also the reticular system now is exciting for our interest, but the whole brain, but specifically, it's known that it's exciting the cerebral cortex, which what makes you now, just from ordinary views, ordinary terminology, is the difference between being asleep in bed with your eyes closed and being awake. So that consciousness, from one quite real view, to neurology, they don't care what consciousness is anyway. I mean, they gave up. They're just not interested in it. The kind of people, they washed their hands of that years ago. If there's such a thing as a mind, they turned it over to psychologists. And psychologists had their hands full. You know, they got tired of it and decided they were in charge of behavior. They turned it over to psychiatrists. And psychiatrists decided, okay, as long as we can just treat sick people. You know, don't ask us what the mind is, but if people come in and say, my mind's giving me problems, we go, well, have a seat or lay down. So the point is, neurologists don't really, well, medicine in general, but neurologists specifically, people, you know, the area of the brain, they have no interest, since they couldn't figure out anyway, of what the mind is, and they have no interest theoretically or philosophically in what consciousness is. They know what everyone means by consciousness, they know what they mean, and they can identify, they can predict what will produce a lack of consciousness. And they can take animals, things. Anyway, they know that if a certain areas of the cortex is cut away from the brain, a man ceases to be conscious. Or as I said, they know under ordinary conditions, if consciousness is lowered, that you go from your eyes open and being alert to the environment to laying down and going to sleep, that what we call consciousness is lowered because the activity, the electrical activity in the cerebral cortex slows down. You can measure it just like you measure any electrical activity. It'll go from, like I said, I think it's the ordinary is from 9 to 13 cycles per second. You lay down and go to sleep. Not only does your heart rate drop, your respiration go down and all that, the electrical activity in the cerebral cortex will go from an average of something like 11 down to like 2 cycles. But it still goes on. That's why you dream, or that accounts for it. It is continually firing off energy through the nerves, and it gets to the cerebral cortex. You know, I have in the past pointed out when I was just talking that the distinction between man and all the other animals and all these ideas that periodically some zoologists will say or some psychologists will claim that they can perceive consciousness in chimpanzees or they've taught them to talk, to actually communicate, that they can rearrange words, that they're dealing in abstract ideas. And I pointed out, any of you who happen to notice that, I said that I have defined the difference between man and all the other creatures, or what makes up consciousness, is the ability to speak. But there's another way to look at it, a quite real way, based upon this, based upon accepted, known, tested, verified physical knowledge of the brain. That is the only difference between us and other animals. But there are two that I like, that I hope that you will do something with. One is, I've already mentioned in passing, is memory. And tied to that, other than speech, perhaps the best one, the distinction between us and every other creature, which is to say the difference between being a conscious creature and a non-conscious creature, is one thing and one thing only. Or you could look at it this way, based upon physical knowledge of man, the animal, and that is, we alone can alter our motor activity. People, just in general, and probably you have, people fool themselves. But in medicine, in zoology, in biology, they know this. Non-mystics, they know this, that animals do not, they cannot, or they've never shown any sign of it. They cannot alter their reactions. They cannot alter their motor activity. They cannot change their behavior. We can change behavior only due to one thing, that thin little yellow coating, the thickness of your shoe sole, if it was spread out. That little bit, that little covering that can be damaged, can be separated from the rest of the brain, but were it not for that, we could not change behavior. And if we could not change behavior, we would have no technology. I can say, and if you can see it, and I could get some neurologists, even though they wouldn't be particularly interested, but I could say, is it not true? Could not we say that the only difference between us and any other creature, the highest in the primates or the vertebrates, is the only difference is, the distinguishing factor is, that we can alter. We can engage in what ordinary people call willful activity. And no one else can. You had to change behavior to learn to drive a car. You had to change behavior to learn to play the piano, to throw a football. You know, what I am trying to nudge and hint and push, I guess I'll go ahead and say it, because I really cannot read each person's brain here and know whether you're getting anything out of this, other than perhaps thinking you picked up some new information that you didn't know about the brain or the nervous system. Remember why we're here. I am not by any means an instructor in human physiology. I am still interested in one thing only. But I could propose to you that perhaps, again, the freshest slap you can get to your own face, perhaps the best antidote to stale storytelling, is to go from looking at you and the nature of man, but you, the nature of consciousness, the problem of consciousness, the possibility, the whole area of another state of consciousness, instead of looking at it on a psychological basis, is look at on a physiological. Everything that's ever been written in the mystical canons, everything I have ever said, everything you've ever thought, is somewhere in that damn diagram I just drew. It's nowhere else. From one view, there is very little information, sensory information, making it to your cerebral cortex, which I repeat, from medicine's view, and I am accepting that, I understand it, that is consciousness, that is your personality, that is your individual intelligence, views of life, snippet, and all of that is gone. Consciousness is just pictured. It's that little wrinkled up dish rag wrapped around your frontal lobes. That thin covering. That is all consciousness amounts to. Well, without that, that is where consciousness lives. Without that, you are not conscious. No one is. And anyway, at any particular moment, there is very little of immediate pressing need of sensory information coming in from all of the outreaches, all the outposts of your body, from your toes and your fingers and your trunk and your back and your thighs. Right now, there's very little information coming in of a pressing nature. And yet, the reticular formation is continually exciting the cortex. That unless you're sitting there dozing off, you are active from 10 to 13 cycles per second constantly. Down in the non-conscious part of the brain, it's already been determined that there is nothing of any great importance. You're not about to tip over. You're not on fire. You're not about to suffer from hypothermia. And yet the cortex is continually being shot from down in the brainstem, from the reticular formation. The energy is being shot day and night, 24 hours a day. And when you're awake, it is shot at a pretty steady, they've measured it, a pretty steady rate. Whether you're sitting there trying to figure out Sunday's New York crossword puzzle, whether you're watching TV, whether you're staring at a wall. If you think that the idea, the reality, much less the idea of being awake or enlightened, contains anything that I haven't mentioned tonight, to the best of my knowledge, I have mentioned everything necessary to understand everything. There is nothing else. The belief that there is something else is only the storytelling of consciousness having nothing else to do. Commonly referred to as daydreaming, but I don't even like that. I was trying not to say anything like that tonight. To just look at on the physiological basis, the known basis that you would find out, you can find in any textbook, any non-mystical neurologist is aware of all this, and the answer is, you know, so what? It would only be a benefit to someone who has some extraordinary experience, as we call it. It would take, in a sense, to put it crudely, a mystic, to be able to go back and look at the physiology of the brain and get anything mystical out of it, in quotation marks. What if instead of being involved with the kinds of activities such as I will continually observe myself, I will continually remember myself, or my kinds of things, I will continually attempt to be conscious of consciousness. What if you went from that to something like this? And I hate to do it, but I'm going ahead and put some words on it. Instead of it being anything even remotely resembling the spiritual, you understand by that, I don't mean religious, I mean the non-physical, the spiritual, the psychological, the mystical. Then instead of you trying to be conscious of consciousness, trying to continually observe and remember yourself, that if you, the brain does not feel, I know. But I'm going to go ahead and say feel, or at least picture is why I went to the trouble of drawing this. And you picture consciousness. You know, normally I just refer to the head and all that. But consciousness, literally, it's known to any first-year med student. Consciousness is right here through that main bulge in your forehead. And once you get through the skull, we're only talking about the thickness of shoe leather. Right there in the front of your head, taking up down mostly to the where the eyebrow bridge is, but just that one area, the cerebral cortex, known, plotted out, any neurologist glance at, knows his way around it if he's a surgeon. No big deal, except for the fact that is where human consciousness resides, there specifically. So instead of this thing that I'm going to study myself, I will try and bring my attention under control. I will try and keep my attention only on my attention. See, I'm quoting my own tricks and methods so that you don't think I'm picking on other people's. Instead of that, what if you tried something like this, that it's this one area right there, it's the cerebral cortex, and instead of I'm trying to observe myself, I'm trying to control my thoughts, it was like it was saying, cortex to the mothership, I'm about to stand up now, I assume you'll take care of my balance, raising my blood pressure, I'm getting a bit chilled, I assume that you might go ahead and dilate some of the vessels in the peripheral system on my skin so that I might get a bit warmer. Just checking in. Of course, it's kind of foolish because it's going to be happening anyway. But what I'm saying is rather than the idea, the picture, the sensation that I'm involved internally, that I, and as I've always pointed out to you, there is no I without consciousness. There is no I without the cerebral cortex. That little wrinkly, lumpy-looking covering. There's no sensation of eye. It does not exist. So the idea, I've been laughing at it or trying to point out the foolishness of it for the last several weeks, that I am going to observe consciousness. Rather than even being tied up in that stale storytelling, which there is no way out of it. It is the neurons, as I point out, there are three kinds of neurons, those bringing in information, that is nerves, and those taking out, the motor and the sensory nerves, and the others, supposedly about 97-98% of all the other neural connections are inner neurons. That's just the brain connected to itself. It's not dealing specifically with information coming in, with sensory information coming in, and then it's sending back after it makes decisions that the motor cortex then sends back what to do when we're not talking about involuntary or autonomic as the nervous system to where you have to make apparently some decision what I'm going to do right now. Rather than that, somewhere in the neighborhood they used to claim of 97% of all the nerves of the body are inner neurons, inner connections. That is, the brain simply talking to itself because it's continually analyzing what should I do. That's the whole point of the brain. That's its whole ability. Is that rather than that being limited, like all other creatures, that all we do is react to what's already programmed and we react one way, to one circumstance, to one stimuli, over and over. You either do it or you don't do it. That we can analyze, we can change and affect, we can even override some of the involuntary to some degree, such as I started to say, a child learns to control your bladder, whereas it is actually part of an autonomic that just when it gets full, what it wants to do is empty, which in a kid it does. But you can learn to some degree. You can affect. But you can strictly affect the motor without any doubt. Is I'll decide to go out and kick a football. I'll decide to go out and hit a golf ball. I'll go out and run. I'll go drive my car. I'll go over and turn on television. I'll reach over and pick up the remote and flip it on. All of that requires, remember, this is not me talking in a mystical sense. I'm giving you right out of Human Physiology Text 101. To do all the things I just said requires that decisions be made. The cerebral cortex decides. There's no sensory information coming in like a pinprick. There's nothing coming in that sends information through the peripheral nervous system that says, TV, TV, must have TV, must have it. There is no external stimuli in the world to bring that on. So, from their view, the cerebral cortex decides, I'll watch TV. And it looks around. Where's the remote? It sees it. And this is not anything that would be a natural reaction to man. The cerebral cortex decides, I want TV on. It looks over there, sees the remote, and it sends right through the brain, down through the spinal cord, out to the peripheral nervous system. It sends through the motor, starts in the motor cortex, and it sends down to muscles in the arm, the shoulders, then the hands, the fingers, and makes you move over there with all kinds of things going on below the cortical level that you reach just so much. Well, that's getting too complicated. Some of you may remember there are all kinds of constant feedbacks. The muscle's getting too tense, too weak, and you have to know just how far to reach. But a lot of that is now part of memory, that you have already learned how to do that. It wasn't natural, but you learned how to do it, and it was filed away. But it only came through the cortex. Had you not been conscious, you would have never learned to make movements like that. There would be no need to. You would never learn to thread a needle, to be able to operate those little small buttons on a remote control. You would have never learned to do it. Now you can do it without even looking. You can pick it up and hold it in your hand, and you know which one runs the channels up and down. Your thumb just goes back and forth. You learn that, and it's now in memory. It is still in the cortical intellect, the cerebral cortex. Rather than trying to, in any spiritual, metaphysical, mystical way, to observe yourself or to have any notion that what you're doing, of us being here, of all of this, the whole idea of achieving Buddhahood, achieving enlightenment, Satori, that all of it is located in that thin area right here in the front of your head. You are not stimulated to do it from any sensory information from the environment. It in some way is arisen in the interneurons of the brain talking to itself. Where can that lead? There's no sensory information coming in to spur it on. It should be obvious to you. There's nothing in life, no heat, no cold, no change in temperature, no change in atmospheric pressure. There's nothing outside your body pushing you to try and awaken. Plus, there's nothing that the cortex or nothing you can do to send out to your motor nerves, as I pointed out. There's no behavior you can do to change your consciousness. I know people believe otherwise, and they imagine they can. But it's storytelling. It is all happening in-house. It's all happening in the interneurons, those who are only connected to themselves. They're not connected to sensory nerves. They're not connected to motor nerves. There's no information actually coming in, and there's no information going out, no directions going out. It's the cortical the cerebral cortex talking to itself. And I shouldn't even say that because that won't fit into a medical textbook. It is the firing of the reticular formation. And when it is not reacting to some, what it's decided was important, significant sensory information, in other words, the cerebral cortex has nothing specific important to do. And the reticular formation is continuing to fire energy and to keep it excited. Remember, it stays excited, it stays active even asleep. Even though it's known to slow down, we know we dream, and they can measure that your cortical, your cerebral cortex is still active. It is still registering electrical current. It can be measured. But when nothing else is going on, you know what's going on with us? We're finding fault with it. There is nothing more mystical in the universe than ever has been than just picture this. Say, all I can do, people forget this, I know how it goes. You know, all I can do is tell you, if I weren't going to lie to you, unless I had some ulterior motive, all I can do is tell you what I have found useful. All this other stuff, I make dogmatic statements, me or Moses or Zoroaster, whatever you read, when things about, well, and I do it all the time. Well, a more awakened man would do this and that, or here's the kind of thing that if everybody would do so and so. That's nothing. It means nothing. The only thing I can tell you, unless I was lying, unless I was, which obviously by now you figured out, I have no real purpose in this. It's not to turn you into some sort of followers or to agree with me. So all I can do is tell you what I have found useful. That's all anybody's done. When Buddha said, here's what an awakened man should do, or here's what it takes to overcome, that isn't what he was saying. He's saying, here's how I did it. That's all you can do. Anything else is imagination. You can read it in a book. I could read it in a book and hope you hadn't read it and pass it off on, I don't understand it, I'd never used it, and to me it sounds right, and I could pass it on to you. You could go, ooh. But it means nothing. So I don't know what you're going to make of this. But I am telling you, I find it so good that I have waited about, it's been about 40 years, that now I'm returning to it. Is in one sense, and it's not to take anything whatsoever away from it. I've been sort of putting it off, and it was worth it. It is to take all of the, quote, mystery out of this. But you can become so fascinated or so habituated to it. I mean, look at me. I can write 7 or 8 pages just at the drop of a, not even a hat, the drop of the cover of my IBM. If I drop it in the floor and turn it on, as long as I can sit there. And without bragging, you may have been, all these other things of the great works of the Book of the Dead or the Bhagavad Gita or the Platform Sutra. You go through all the great writings of the world, and I used to appreciate some of them, but I'm going to tell you the truth. As far as I'm concerned, I can sit down at the top of my head, and the stuff I write, to me, is better, if you know what I mean. But then, after that, I got to say, so what? It's fun to do, and I can go back and read some of it. As I said, I can go back and read it, and I don't know it. This, I meet several times people hand me stuff, and say, what do you think of this? And I'll read it. Anyway, they want me to comment, I thought, and they'll say, well, you realize that's from Magnus Machina. I copied out. I thought, shit, I don't remember that. I got this off of a tape you did, and I look at it. Without knowing it, I think, where'd you get that? I might like to read that. And they go, well, he wrote it. That is where you can stay, and I understand the fun of it. I assume, safely, that you find it some fun showing up here. It all has to do with all sorts of things below the conscious level, you know, whether you feel good, whether you're too hot, whether what you've had to eat. But on nights when it goes well, isn't it fun to hear me talk about it? I have fun talking about it. But it's not doing it. Because in a sense, there is no doing it. But I am recommending the point of tonight and last night, or Monday night for those of you that had the warm-up, is after you've gone this far, and if any of you get this interested, go to the library. You may have it at home, probably an encyclopedia. Just get just a basic text on physiology. First year college. Anyway, just that doesn't even matter how crude it is. One of these Time Life books or Reader's Digest, something on the human body, if it's got a good basic chapter on the human nervous system, just look through it yourself. Not on the basis you're about to take a test, but after all you've been through, after all you've observed about you, and to sit there, I recommend it. Besides listening to me and trying to see this little diagram, and to sit there and read it. If it's in some simple textbook, it's probably just 4 or 5 pages long. Read it over 2 or 3 times. Read again tomorrow. And just let. Well, if it happens the right way, you don't have to try and to put it together. It'll start coming to you, all the things that you think that you've heard me say or that you realize yourself. And I repeat to you, you've got to know this in a lucid moment. There is no metaphysics. If there is, there is no metaphysics like physics. There's no mysticism without the brain. There is no consciousness. There is no mind. There's no personality without this thin layer of nerves, this spongy substance. There's simply not. It is very easy for everyone, and it seems to be particularly easy for mystics. What I'm talking about is you get so caught up in it. It is so much fun. But a lot of it's just habit. But it gets to be so much fun, you think, well, I'm not permanently awake. I can't stay awake. And from one view, you would think, well, any reasonable human on this planet that had been working to do this for 50 years and still can't do it all the time, in other words, hadn't succeeded, if success would be, I can stay what I call awake under all conditions all the time. I've been working on it now for many decades, older than most of you are. But from any ordinary view, what if that was a man trying to learn to kick field goals, throw baskets from mid-court, repair an automobile, rebuild a transmission? You go, well, I can do it sometimes. I can do it when I really hold my mind to it. And you go, well, how long have you been working on this? And you go, well, 50 years. You think, you know, you're crazy. You know, it doesn't bother you at all. And any ordinary person, I would say, would be severely bothered. Yes, it does. I'm sorry you pointed it out, but yeah, I'm very upset. You know, I feel like a poster boy for stupidity. But only mystics. And I'm including me, remember. I'm not attacking you. Can fail, ultimately. That is, you can't do it under all conditions, or you don't do it. You might as well say you can't. I don't know why. I even tried to weasel out there, didn't I? You can't do it all the time under all conditions, and yet you find it quite acceptable. I got no complaint, and yet I failed at it. And I don't mean just me. The great mystical master that I start off with that said that, yes, I know all about awakening, and I'm sick. I'm just, all I want now is to get over the sickness of it. All I'm trying to do is find a cure for being enlightened. I know what he means, because what he means is, well, that's what I've been talking about tonight. It's what I'm talking about now. It's not a cure for it, and it's not him complaining. And I don't know, personally, or I wouldn't do it. I don't know of a better slap, a more refreshing thing to do than to try and turn your attention, because it's there. It doesn't take, it's not speculation, it's not an allegory. It's just simply try and turn your attention. You don't have to forget what you've done and what you think you've seen, but just turn it to this. Go get a book. Pull out your dictionary or your encyclopedia and just read over yourself a bunch of times. Just keep reading it. Just what they describe. It's just known, accepted fact. They have tested it. It's not theory. They've had enough experience now playing with the human nervous system and the brain that it's known. Cut this, mice that, damage this, stimulate this, such and such happens. Stimulate it, and such fails to happen, or it will impair such and such. There it is. There is the human organism, including consciousness. I keep pointing out that this is still correct. Awakening, enlightenment, the great struggle to awaken, the great secret work. It all exists in consciousness and nowhere else. And consciousness exists in the cerebral cortex and nowhere else. And neurology knows full well everything it does and when it's not there, what it doesn't do. And neurology won't even fool with the idea of where's the mind? Or what is the metaphysical ramifications of consciousness? They don't know what you mean. They're not interested. We can tell you what it does. We can tell you when it's gone, and we can tell you what will make it go away. They can track down to the nerves. They can get down to the reticular system. And, of course, higher up, but then get down there specifically. And they know what will cause you to go non-conscious. And you can have all the fine daydreams you want to. You can have written 275,000 verses on the metaphysics and the mystery of awakening. And all I got to do is cut down the reticular system, stop the blood flow, diminish the blood flow into the cortex. And you could have had Buddha mind a few minutes ago, and now you're laying on the floor, and you got no mind. You could have been super conscious, as you call it. You could have been mystically awake 2 minutes ago, and they can sniff a certain place or just cut down the blood supply, and now you're laying down, and you're not only not super conscious, you're no longer conscious. Where's the mystery? Where's the problem? Now, I repeat one more time. I hope none of you here in other cities, this is no wise. I mean, it's not something I came up with. Like, well, let's face the facts. So we're overdoing it the rest of this. We've, you know, made a big deal out of it. No such thing. I'm telling you, I have found this to be of great help, or I wouldn't be passing it on. Is you don't have to look at it as there's nothing permanent. So it's not like I'm abandoning everything else. I enjoy writing all those allegorical stories too much. That'll be the final test. You'll know I'm damn near awake if I ever stop writing and being clever. Because you won't know it, because if I do reach that point, you'll never see me again, probably, to tell you the truth. But just in case that didn't happen and I quit being, well, I call it clever. If I ever stop that, you'll know. If you don't know any other way, you'll know that son of a bitch probably now, he made it. He is permanently awake. I probably wouldn't say anything. I can't imagine what you got to say. But all that was still to point out to you, this is not to diminish the fun, or in a sense, the mystery of all this. The fascination, just the fun. How about that? But wouldn't it be fun to be able to do it better? Even if it sounds much more pedestrian than you ever imagined. It sounded kind of crude. I mean, tonight didn't sound like quite if a stranger walked in tonight and heard my tapes or read something, came here expecting a metaphysical lecture on awakening, etc. And what if they'd sit there and listen to this? Like, what the hell was that? It was like he was trying to give a lesson in the anatomy and the functioning of the brain. What the hell does that have to do with awakening? Well, there's no awakening without it. I said more than I intended to. I highly recommend, if you get anything, if you even suspect, if you got nothing tonight and think, what did I miss? Go home. I assume most of you got an encyclopedia, or go to the library, or just any kind of thing. Just those simple books that they used to put out, I was trying to think, Time, Life, Reader's Digest, used to always be putting out the human anatomy for everyday man. What it meant was, you know, people with an IQ of 80 and people with a short attention span. But, you know, you might find this interesting having to do with the human body, that kind of thing. I'm telling you, it'll give you all you need to know, because I have made it, you know, damn simple. Just that part. But I think it might do some of you better. I'm recommending it, that you sit there and read over. Whatever, it shouldn't take 4 or 5 pages. I'll give you just a general outline and description that I've already given, and just read it. Get up and drink some coffee or lay it down and read it again tomorrow. Just read those 3 or 4 pages I think it'll take care of itself. Because I firmly believe that a lot of you, you'll get some other stuff that you didn't get sitting here listening to me do it. I could have made it appear to be much more parallel between my descriptions from textbooks of the physiology of the nervous system. I could have been drawing parallels as I went along, like, hey, doesn't this explain such and such in the the mystical sense, or, hey, how about all the times I've described this and that, or all the times Buddha said, well, life is blah, 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 and the human consciousness, hey, look right here. Doesn't that explain it? See, I didn't do that. But you go off and read it on your own and just sit there and keep and get a picture in your own head of your brain about all the little energy coming in and out. That's the only thing that there is. There's nothing else. There's no soul. There's no spirit. There's no mind. There's electrical and chemical activity going on. It keeps you alive, and it keeps you conscious by anybody's definition. And mystics believe that there's something beyond that is storytelling. Lots of fun, but it's storytelling. And I say you can tell stories and have fun and still try and do better at this. And if you're going to do better, I don't know a better way than to realize what's going on inside your own head, inside the human brain, and that's it. Or even if that's not it, if you take what they accept, what non-mystical people, neurologists, pathologists, one neurologist, you understand what I mean by that, just people who are non, they're not mystically inclined at all. Just take what they know, what they say, and it explains everything. I mean, there is the explanation, if you can see it. There is no mysticism outside of that. Never has been. It can be a real slap to an old stale face. Because I don't know how much further you can get away from the familiar old stories of mysticism. I keep trying to change them here and there and shift it a little bit. But the further you can get away from it, the better. That is, the further you can get away from whatever's the old and familiar stories to you, the old familiar ways you're doing things, the further away, the better. And I don't know how much further you can get away than this. Because in a sense, you just abandon all mysticism. And what I'm going to do is learn everything I can that seems pertinent about the nervous system and the brain. I recommend it most highly. Lay down any books you got by me or Buddha or anybody else. Just pick this up and read it over for a few days. See what happens. Consciousness calling the mothership. I'm about to take off my mic now. And I'm going to stand up. Of course, I know I don't need to. But I assume that all the brain parts will be ready. It'll take care of my equilibrium, the change in blood pressure, slight change in heartbeat just standing up. You ready? Consciousness checking out momentarily. Take over. Good show. Keep going. Keep it up. I'm here. I've got nothing else to do. You can take care of it right now. I'm going to take off my mic and I'm going to stand up. And then I'm going to step off this little platform and I'm going out and drive home. So I'll be here if you need me, but you're the mothership. I'm just letting you know I'm here if you need me. If you need me, I'm here, but go ahead. Go ahead. Because you're not giving it permission. All you're doing is stating the obvious. All you're doing is acknowledging what has always been. Checking out.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.